You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money, still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
And thanks to the help we get from ASC Certified Technician Nick Stauffel, who runs a place called Lloyd's Automotive in St. Paul, we're going to help you keep it running. Nick, good morning to you and Happy New Year.
Yeah, good morning to you, Denny.
Yeah, I heard that forecast. It looks like you and your crews will be busy probably plowing a little bit of snow before people bring their vehicles in come Monday.
I think it does look that way, and I'm sure the kids will be happy being off of school for the next week here. They'll enjoy that white stuff.
Well, it'll be interesting to see if, again, this forecast comes true, because we, as we just heard, there is a winter storm watch goes into effect noon tomorrow to noon Monday. 3 to 7 inches of new snow tomorrow, 2 to 4 Sunday night, obviously affecting Monday morning drive time. So stay tuned to CCO. We'll keep you informed of that. In the meantime, if you have problems with your car, your truck, your van, and you're going to bring it in for service, but you kind of want to know what could be ailing, it's always kind of good to get a little heads-up information from Nick. He'll give you a little analysis over the radio. Now, you don't have to be some motorhead or gearhead or a mechanic yourself. If you have any kind of a car care question, we'd love to hear from you. But we want to hear from you sooner rather than later. Nick takes his leave about 7:45 this morning, making way for Ted Farrell's Wine Chat. So if you have any kind of a car care question, call us or text us. Just one number will get you either a phone call or a text. That number is 651-461-9226. Here we are, Saturday, December 27th, making way for a brand new year coming up, and some questions already. Here's one we get from time to time, not often, because I don't really hear from it. We used to see commercials, ads for, rust proofing, and a listener wants to know, is that still around, and is it worth it?
That's a good question, you know, and we've discussed it in the past, and I think a lot of those products do a fine job. You know, do your research, you know, ask friends, neighbors, as always, see if anyone has any experience with it. I also believe, though, if you, on a regular basis, even through the winter months when you have a warmer day, run it through the car wash and pay the extra buck or two to have that undercarriage sprayed down. I think that that does an amazing job keeping things from that buildup of salt, which will create the rust and all that. And, you know, I think as vehicles have evolved, if you can remember, you know, a few years ago that the cars would rust out, it seemed like,
yeah,
in a few years. And now it seemed that cars are 15 years old and they still look new. So if you take care of your car, wash it, I think that's probably the best plan.
Yeah, even vehicles that are parked outside and have no garage, they're lasting a lot longer. Yeah, so that's bravo to the manufacturers for doing that. I'm looking at another one here. Oh, yeah, there's something. Wants to know if there are still block heaters, if those are still available, do manufacturers still make them, or are there aftermarkets? Tell us, what is a block heater, and are they still around?
Not as common as they used to be. To be honest, my truck, like I've mentioned, is about a year old, and I don't think it even has one. And to be honest, I don't think it's necessary. You know, I think with the evolution of cars have gotten better and they figured out fuels and the coolants and, you know, the electrical systems, they've found ways to make it so the car's much more efficient and will start on the coldest days. And essentially what a block heater did, there were a couple different versions. Sometimes there was a core plug, which is something, a heating element that was put into the base of the engine block where the core where they poured or built that block from, and that heating element would heat the coolant to keep things from getting too cold. The other version, which was probably more common, would be a magnetic one, and as cars have evolved, a lot more of them are built with an aluminum block, so and the magnet won't stick to that. So it changed and evolved. I don't think it's necessary. You know, if you have a big truck or a piece of farm equipment, obviously it's diesel operated, it's out in the cold weather, something in that type of situation, you might need some extra power or heat to get things going a little bit quicker. But for a passenger vehicle, I don't think it's necessary at all.
I remember we many years ago, and we had it for years, was a 1997 Ford Explorer, and it had a plug, electrical plug, three-prong, you know, grounded plug, coming out of the, by the front bumper in that area, coming out by the radiator. Now, was that kind of a built-in block heater? Is that what that was?
That's what that was, and as you mentioned, that vintage, it probably more helpful. And a lot of vehicles used to have them. You know, if you can think far enough back, even pickup trucks that were, you know, that ran off of diesel would have that netting on the front of the grill to keep the heat in there to allow things to run properly and keep warmed up. And like I said, with technology, I think they found ways that that's not necessary. And the cars seem to start on, you know, well-maintained vehicles seem to start on even the coldest days.
And boy, you guys at Lloyd's kept that thing running for what, 21 years or so? Amazing.
I remember the Explorer.
Yeah.
Well, did you pass it on to somebody? Is it still on the road?
We don't know. I think it may be somewhere in Mankato, was the last I heard. But speaking of that, even the it started to rust a little bit, and I tried to patch it. So who knows if and when that thing is still around. But, yeah, even after all those years, 21, it had about 106,000 miles on it, as I recall. But yeah, we may find out from someone if that vehicle is still around. I'm looking at another text, Nick, from a listener saying, Merry Christmas. Thank you. And to you, when doing your 5,000 mile oil changes, is it preferable to do tire rotations as well or do the rotation every other oil change? What do you guys do at Lloyd's?
You know, I would say that that depends on the vehicle setup, the tire design. My truck, it's got these knobby tires on it, so we need to rotate them every oil change to keep them running smoothly, to keep that road noise down. I would say it's probably more common on most passenger vehicles. You know, the run-of-the-mill vehicle, it's every other oil change. But I probably wouldn't go much longer than that because the tires are going to start to wear, and you want them to wear evenly. And rotating the tires to different corners of the vehicle help them last longer because you're wearing different edges of the tire. So to get the most out of the tires, which have gotten very expensive, performing that rotation, you know, if it's every oil change or every other oil change, will prolong the life of those tires.
Absolutely. 651-461-9226. We'd love to hear any kind of a car care question you may have, who's on your mind if you drive and have problems. Give us a call or send a text. 651-461-9226. This listener sent this text. Is the aluminum F-150 body rust-proof? Does that Ford pickup have an aluminum body?
There are some vehicles that have aluminum panels, and it corrodes differently. It's not the traditional rust. Obviously, salt will react with the aluminum and corrode also, but it's much more probably less likely to rust out like you're thinking of how vehicles used to corrode and rust away. But even at that, the coatings and the protection that they put in the paint and the panels as they assemble the vehicles is so much better where, you know, you run it through the car wash on a semi-regular basis will do wonders for the longevity of that paint job and the body of that vehicle.
I was talking to my son Tony a couple of weeks ago about the old Corvettes. I'm not sure about the new ones. I assume they are sheet metal. But the old ones, were they not fiberglass bodies?
Yes, they were. They've tried a lot of things. You know, if you remember Saturn, they had plastic panels on the vehicle. So they've tried every product they can find. And I think that the metal bodies that are, like I said, the panels are protected much better than they were years ago. So I think they've kind of figured the trick out to that rust problem.
Absolutely. Nick, hang on. We're going to take a quick break. Let's invite our listeners to join in. Any kind of a car care question, if you wanted to always ask a mechanic a question, today's your lucky day. 651-461-9226. Hey, yeah, you can call it in if you want to chat with Nick or just send a text like other folks are doing. 651-461-9226. I want to reiterate the winter weather advisory. There's a winter storm watch out that is in effect now for the Twin Cities surrounding area, in effect tomorrow, 6 in the morning until Monday at noon. What are we talking about? We're talking about during the day tomorrow. There'll be a chance of rain. It's going to be really a mixed bag. But the National Weather Service is saying there's about a 90% chance this is going to happen. New snow accumulation, this is just during the day, throughout the day tomorrow, 3 to 7 inches for your Sunday. Sunday night, we could get another 2 to 4 inches, obviously affecting Monday morning drive time. You stay with us here, and CCO will keep you posted on these ever-changing conditions. Again, a winter weather outlook, the winter storm watch, not a warning yet, but a watch, in effect, December 28th, 6 a.m. until the 29th at noon. Right now, we're 32, heading for 42 on News Talk 830. This is WCCO. And we're back. It is a Saturday morning on CCO when we talk cars, trucks, vans, problems you may be having with yours. Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive in St. Paul answering those questions. It's 651-461-9226. Nick, again, we always like to have you give us more information on folks maybe needing the help at Lloyd's. How do we find you?
Absolutely. If you ever have a question, as we always say, you don't have to bring it to us, but we can always help you prepare for that visit to your dealership or shop. And you can reach us at 651-228-1316. If you happen to be in St. Paul doing maybe a little post-Christmas shopping or getting a bite to eat, we're at 982 Grand. It's on the corner of Grand and Chatsworth, two blocks east of Lexington Parkway. And if you need more information, you can always look at our website, which is lloydsautomotive.net.
Very good, Nick. We'll get you that information before Nick takes his leave, which is about 7:45 this morning. So if you have a car care question of any kind, let's hear from you sooner rather than later. 651-461-9226. This comes from Jeff in Maple Grove. Is it still necessary to change and flush the transmission fluid every 50,000 miles? It's a real pain to do so on the Volkswagen I drive. I don't know how many folks are able to do that themselves, but what do you think? Is it necessary? We talked about flushing transmission fluid once in a while here. What do you think?
We do, and you know, as I'm going to say, check the maintenance in your manual. It'll kind of have an interval that they're looking for you to perform a service. And the transmission fluid services has evolved, as we've mentioned before. You know, it used to be if you go back years ago, you'd pull the pan down, take out the filter. You'd end up replacing maybe a third of the fluid with that process. And then we started doing flushes, which would exchange all the fluid. And now, I guess most commonly now, it's a drain and fill where there's a drain plug just like their, you know, your engine, that the fluid will drain out, and there's a procedure, a process to refill it. And I think that's what the text is referring to, because some of them are a little complex. Temperature can be sensitive, having the right tooling. A lot of times, even to have any physical access, you have to have it up in the air. So if you have the capabilities, by all means, I appreciate it. I think it's great that you're doing those tasks. But for most of us, you probably need to bring it into the shop where they can get it up in the air and do it properly. Make sure you get that fluid back in the right spot in the right amount, because the last thing we want to do is run a transmission low on fluid, because that could create bigger problems for you.
I was watching, you mentioned temperature, and I was watching a video of, I can't remember what vehicle, but it was, they were talking about, it must, at least in this case, it was had to be like between 195 and 200 or something pretty precise. I'm not sure why. But how do your crews know, if you're just flushing it and filling it, how do you know you're putting the right amount in? There's no dipstick, right?
Oftentimes there's not a dipstick. We first check to see how much that comes out, right? You know, and if there was any signs of leaking, you know, because if somebody's coming in for a service, we want to make sure we do, you know, the full inspection. So if we see any signs of leaking from any seals or joints or anything, we're going to document that. And then when we remove the fluid, we're going to kind of collect it and determine the level that was in there. Now, obviously, we have resources that give us quantities and fluid types, because that's the other piece of this puzzle is that transmission fluids. I can't tell you how many we have up on the shelf upstairs, but it's a growing number. I can promise you that. It's not like where there was just one or two, and there's probably a couple dozen different varieties depending on the make and model. So, and the reason why temperature becomes in place, some of them are at a certain temp, and as that fluid heats up, it starts to expand, which can change the level of the fluid. So you have to make sure you read that procedure correctly and take your time when you're performing that task.
That's why we leave it up to your crew to check on their computer, right? You'll have whatever the manufacturer recommends, it'll be right there in your computer.
Yeah, you know, quantity, fluid type, and even the procedure, because, you know, they, as soon as they figure out a really easy way to do something, they say, this is too easy, we need to make it more complicated. So let's change how you refill that transmission.
I was going to comment, I saw something on the internet. Of course, we all know that it's always true what you see on the internet. This had to do with BMW, and again, this may have been a joke. There was a picture of a It could have been a bolt or maybe a screw, whatever it was. It was just a piece of hardware that this thing on Facebook said BMW is moving toward certain hardware that the do-it-yourselfer can't do. You need a special tool for the so those people who are really good do-it-yourselfers would not be able to do it, and they'd have to bring it in for service. I don't know if that's true or not.
Well, there are some tamper-proof type hardware that will take a certain inverted Torx, but you can still get the tools. They're available. There's not the common tools that most of us have in our little handy toolbox at home. And I think for part of the reasons is safety, liability, once again, if you have the tooling and the resources, I think it's great that people repair their own stuff, whether it's their vehicle or their dishwasher, whatever it may be. I think it's great that we use our minds and hands together.
Yeah.
But if you don't have the know-how and you go down that rabbit hole, you oftentimes can make things more complicated, more expensive for yourself.
That's right. We were talking about block heaters earlier in the show, and this listener said, I came from Rich in St. Paul. I had an inline heater that was in one of the coolant lines. Love the show. Thanks, Rich. Have you heard of that one?
There were, the heater hoses. You used to also have those flushing tees, if you remember. And same thing. I think if you went back a couple decades, it was a product and an item that helped us get the cars on the coldest days, especially when they were carbureted. You needed and a little luck too, I would say, some starting fluid, a screwdriver, a block heater, you name it, to get those cars running. Years ago was a little more of a dance, but now with the fuel injection systems and the way cars are designed, like I said, on the coldest of days, if your vehicle is maintained properly, it's going to start up.
Yeah. Let us grab a phone call this morning, Nick. Jim checking in from Isle, I believe, this morning. Jim, thank you. What is your question for Nick?
Well, good morning and Happy New Year, Danny. I have a question. I'm 85 years old, and for the last 50 years, someone told me way back when you warm up your engine to put it in neutral, put the automatic transmission in neutral, and that warms up the transmission. Now, I've been doing that with my new vehicle, which doesn't even have a shift lever. It's just got a dial. Now, does that still make sense, or is that just a fallacy?
No, I think years ago that the transmission fluid didn't circulate everywhere until it was in neutral or whatever, it was reversed, until a certain temperature. Then once things warmed up, it would circulate through the rest of the unit there. And even at that time, I don't think it was ever really necessary, because the idea is it's like kind of like a thermostat on your engine. That thermostat's going to stay closed until the engine warms up. Once the engine's up to running temp, it'll open and circulate through the radiator and the rest of the cooling system. The transmission was kind of doing the same thing. So I don't think it was ever really necessary. People had their own steps and procedures, which is fine. But I even on today's vehicle, you definitely don't need to do that. I think you start the vehicle. I think within a few moments, the car is satisfied to get going. It's more to our comfort to make sure we got our windows cleared and a little bit of warmth in the vehicle before you head down the road.
Very good. Thank you, Jim. Happy New Year to you. Thanks for the call. Keep in mind that Nick will be with us for right about now, maybe another 15 minutes, 13, 14 minutes. So don't hesitate. Give us a call. Send a text. Any kind of a car care question, we welcome yours, 651-461-9226. Jim had mentioned, and you had mentioned, rather, thermostats. And we had a text that came in earlier about thermostats. Are they still changed regularly, or like they used to many years ago? What's the story on thermostats? Or do they just last forever?
Well, I think they kind of fall in line with everything we've kind of touched on here, that I think the way they're designed and manufactured is much better. We still replace them. People will come in with an overheating situation or a poor heat type of situation where that thermostat's bypassing. But I think, with the changing the coolant itself, we used to change our antifreeze every other year. Now they'll go 100,000 miles. So I would say as things have evolved, most all items have gotten better, thermostat included. So I don't think it's something that would be on a regular interval or schedule to replace. It's more of on a need base as something were to fail.
That makes sense. Hang on, Nick. We'll take a break. We're going to look at that important forecast. Stay with us. And again, you can give Nick a call with any car care question that's on your mind, 651-461-9226, either a phone call or a text. From News Talk 830, this is WCCO. And welcome back to CCO's Car Care Show. We're around, thanks to Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive, every Saturday right after the 7 o'clock news break, answering any kind of a car care question you may have. Just call us or text us, 651-461-9226. Here's another text for you, Nick. 2023 GMC Yukon XL that recurrently goes into something called limp mode in cold weather only always appears to occur at freezing temperatures. It is characterized by loss of power steering, power brakes with a maximum speed limit of 43 miles per hour. Any idea what causes this?
Well, usually if there's something with one of the safety, the throttle, something with the braking system, if there's a reason why the computer system would be concerned about our safety, it'll go into a limping mode is the easiest way to describe it. Typically, though, if it goes into a limping mode, finding the reason or the source is pretty straightforward. You know, we'll connect our scan tool, record a bunch of data, figure out from that data or the codes what part of the vehicle we need to assess, you know, from there, kind of break it down and figure out what happened. But they've limping mode's been around for a while. A lot of times it's related to the throttle. The last thing they want is a vehicle accelerating when it shouldn't be. So they sense one of those sensors or switches is not working properly. The car kind of locked itself down to keep us safe and still able to move, but not, you know, how we would like. So you got to get that in to the shop to figure out what had happened and how to get it repaired.
Very good. It comes from Dave North Oaks. Thanks, Dave. I love your show. Texter says, I own a 1993 Chev Cavalier wagon. Wow. Very rare. I have to add coolant every so often. No physical leaks, so I assume the head gasket has a leak. Is it being burned off in combustion, do you think?
That would be my suspicion. I would take a look at the coolant, maybe test it. Oftentimes, if coolant is getting into the combustion chamber, exhaust is getting out. And if that's the case, that coolant might need some new servicing, cleaned out and such. It's an older vehicle, depending the amount and the quantity, kind of based on the recommendation there. If it's still operating fine, you're getting good heat, good power. Replacing the cylinder head gasket or machining the head can be quite costly. Obviously, the vehicle's a little bit older. Not sure if the cost is worth the return on investment, I guess you could say. So I would I'd do a little more research, check the coolant. I think if you flush it out, keep it full, buy yourself some more time, and hopefully you don't have to go down the road of replacing that.
Looking at another, by the way, Nick will be here for another few minutes or so, and we still have time for yours. We have a couple of texts to get through. In the meantime, 2024 Buick, 9,500 miles on it. Texter says, I had an oil change at 5,000 miles. When do I need to get the next change? Well, probably there's a candidate to read the manual, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, each manufacturer has their own recommendation. Personally, you know, and I've done this my whole life pretty much. I think 5,000 miles on a synthetic oil is the right interval. I think at that point the vehicle gets a good check over. You get a new clean filter, good clean oil in that engine. And I think with the type of mechanical repairs that we're doing these days, I think an oil change on a regular basis will help minimize or prevent some of those mechanical failures. So I feel pretty strongly about 5,000 miles. Obviously, read your owner's manual. Talk with your shop, your dealership, take their recommendation into consideration. But I think if you do a little homework, you'll get the answer that you need.
I've probably asked you this before, Nick, but in your experience, and you've been at Lloyd's a long time, what have you seen as far as people maybe never changing their oil in X amount of miles? What have you seen once you tried to change that, whatever's left?
We've seen it. We've seen where people have never, ever changed the oil, and then their engine stopped, ran out of oil. That's an extreme case, but I think more commonly what we see is we're busy and we forget, and then we're a month late, 2 months late. You know, we go a couple thousand miles over. You know, doing that one time isn't the end of the world, but if that's part of the normal practice, when there's a issue or a problem, we see excessive wear on camshafts. We see rocker arms, push rods. We see oil sludge. You know, a lot of these smaller engines have smaller turbos, and those ports that use the oil to lubricate it are very small. They get filled with sludge and crud. Oil can't flow through and lubricate it, and then we have component failure. And that's what I'm referring to, is that these are very expensive repairs, and just doing that oil change on a regular basis saves yourself a lot of headache, a lot of money, and it gets the car into the shop that can prevent other failures. You know, maintenance is a lot more reasonable than a repair, because when you have the repair, you still have to do the maintenance in addition to that repair. So try to avoid that piece of it and just take care of your vehicle like we talk about every week, to be honest.
And I was thinking of all the maintenance that we can not do ourselves, but have done. Would you say that an oil change, a regular oil change, whether you're using, you know, most places are all new cars have the synthetic, right? There's no.
For the vast majority, it's a synthetic oil. The weights keep changing, as you know. You go far enough back, you know, you're using straight weight, and then 1040 and 530 and 1030, and now we're down to 016 in some manufacturers. So doing the oil change, because the oil change itself, the new filter, are just probably the biggest thing you can do for your vehicle. But in addition to that, the car's getting looked at. It's up in the air. We're checking out the front end with the steering, the suspension, making sure there's no worn parts, your brakes, your tires, all these things that keep us safe on the road, get a good look at. And when that happens, it helps you know the condition of your vehicle. If you're headed on a long road trip, you want to know if you're going to make it there and not get stranded somewhere.
Yeah, that makes sense. Texas says, I drive a BMW X5 that has larger size tires in the rear than on the front. Do I still need to rotate the tires, but just from side to side?
You can. You have to check to see if they're directional also, because in some cases when they have two different size front and rear wheels, sometimes those tires are directional, which means that they're on that corner, meaning if you move it from left to right, it's going to be going the wrong direction. So, rotating your tires is an important piece to, I think, maintenance, but in some situations like that vehicle and some other sportier vehicles out there that'll have different size front and rear tires, you have to keep in mind that you can't necessarily rotate those other than side to side as long as they're not directional tires.
Yeah, that's a whole different animal. One more here. Any recommendations, Texter says, on products to add to gas as an injector cleaner?
There's a lot of products out there, and I think that they're fine. But I'm not, this is what I know factually. You cannot fix a car from a can. Meaning, if there's some sort of problem, that problem has to be resolved. Now, can you add some of these products as maintenance? For sure you can. And do they help? I'm sure they do. But if you have a known problem or a failure, once it's to that point, like if you have a fuel injector that's leaking or failed, that can of product's not going to fix that fuel injector. If your fuel pump is going out, I mean, those types of things, they're just failed components. Now, keeping things from sludging up and gumming up, I think those products can definitely help. You'll have to figure out if it's worth the cost to you. There's a trade-off there also. Some of them are quite expensive. So just do your research, careful reading what you see online, as you mentioned earlier, but talk to your friends, your mechanic, see what people have done in the past. If they have a common product that they like to keep that thing running on the road, it's worth a try, I guess.
Very good. I want to alert our listeners, Nick, that those that we didn't get to, and if you add to them via text, I'll save those, and we'll open up the show with those next week that we didn't get to. So thanks for your patience. Nick, for those that, again, need help from Lloyd's Automotive, tell us how we find you guys.
Yes, sir. If you have a question before you take it into your shop or dealership, we can absolutely help you with those questions. You can reach us at 651-228-1316. If you need to stop and say hi, we'll have you anytime. We're at 982 Grand Avenue in St. Paul, which is two blocks east of Lexington Parkway. And if you need more information, you can always find that on our website, which is lloydsautomotive.net.
Some of the nicest, most knowledgeable people you will ever meet right there at Lloyd's. Nick, thank you so much. Happy New Year to you and your family and all the good crew at Lloyd's. Let's do this again next week in the new year.
That sounds good, Dan. Denny, you have a good, safe New Year, and as all of our listeners, too.
Very good. Thank you, Nick. Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive.
Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show. We bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.